Our final case of this morning is United States against Townsend. Mr. Berger.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Donald J. Berger. I represent Reginald Townsend in his appeal of his sentencing in a violation of Blakely. Reginald Townsend was convicted of armed bank robbery in violation of 18 U.S.C. 2113A. In 18 U.S.C. 924C. He was sentenced on July 18, 2003 in front of the Honorable Robert L. Miller, Jr., who I have great respect for. The defendant was sentenced as a career offender because
the court showed more respect by immediately dismissing your notice of appeal.
Well,
not that much respect.
I can only say that in light of recent developments in constitutional law that possibly we assert that the Honorable Robert L. Miller erred.
That, of course, is the core question. You know, I may have misunderstood Lewis. Maybe I even was confusing Lewis, the fourth case, with yours, but in this case, did the district court find any facts by a preponderance, or was the finding about the priors strictly limited to the face of the charging documents? Your whole argument on appeal seems to be that the judge should have gone behind the face of the charging documents, which implies that he didn't.
And I think even
we have compliance with Taylor and Shepard here.
And I think this court has even allowed that, Your Honor, in both.
No, I'm just trying to figure out first what actually happened. Did the district judge, in characterizing the priors, go behind the face of the charging document?
No, he did not.
All right. So we've got, if you want to think about the Sixth Amendment question, it doesn't look like there's any conceivable Sixth Amendment problem here, is there?
No, Your Honor.
All right.
Okay, but in this court,
of course, if you wanted him to go behind the face of the charging documents, then you were consenting, waiving any Sixth Amendment right. Booker says rights can be waived.
Well,
you were trying, it looks like, desperately to waive a Sixth Amendment right, and the district judge frustrated your effort to do so.
Yes. But the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is the fact that the court should have gone beyond the face of the document. And I think this court in Shannon,
I doubt very much that what we said in Shannon survived Shepard.
Okay.
Let's talk about Shepard. Would there be any basis under Shepard for going behind the face of the charging documents?
I think Shepard allows that, Your Honor. And in citing where it indicates generally limited to examining the statutory definition, charging document, written plea agreement, transcript of the plea colloquy, and any explicit factual findings by the trial judge to which the defendant assented. I think the generally is a term that allows the court to go beyond the document. And I think in this court, in United States versus Cole, has allowed that, wherein it states that obviously a sentencing court must confine itself to the charging document and statutory definition of the offense. We have, however, allowed some deviation from this rule when both of these sources prove ambiguous. In Shannon, while affirming the general rule, our court sitting in Bach observed that a court may look beyond the charging document.
Yes, I understand that. And then Shannon came along and said, roughly, we were too liberal. Shepard came along and said we were too liberal even in Shannon. Shannon took a restricted view of when you could go beyond the charging documents, and Shepard took an even more restricted view.
I understand that, Your Honor, but I still think that the language in Shepard allows the court to go beyond that when it indicates that it was generally limited and it didn't say strictly limited. And I think the term generally still allows the court to review that.
Well, is it your view that the priors, like a potential generic burglary case, might be the kinds of offense that would be classified as nonviolent? I thought what you wanted to do was go behind the documents to show that your client had not used any actual violence.
And that is exactly right.
That's completely irrelevant to the question. And if you take burglary, if somebody commits a prior of burglary under Taylor and Shepard, that is a crime of violence. It's not necessarily actually to meet the householder and shoot him. It's a crime of violence because the invader might meet the householder and violence might ensue. It's a crime of violence, in other words, whether or not anybody shot or punched anybody. So proof that in a particular case the burglar did not meet the householder wouldn't make it less a crime of violence. So I don't understand how the evidence you seek to present would even be relevant.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the underlying offense was not a burglary. It was a robbery.
I understand that, but I'm trying to give a good example because that was Taylor's example. I mean, it establishes the principle that you can have a crime of violence without any actual violence, and that often the characterization is done crime by crime, not punch by punch. Right? That's the basic holding of Taylor.
And if this court holds that way, Your Honor, then obviously Mr. Townsend's case suffers. But in fact, I think that in the underlying case, a 1998 conviction where he comes into a store and does some shopping at a convenience store, has two hands full of groceries, goes up to the counter and asks for their money, and he has both of his hands occupied with groceries, and the clerk says, well, how are you, in generally paraphrasing, the clerk says, how are you going to rob me or take the money? He says, with the gun in my pocket.
Right.
And it's just
right. So wouldn't the putting in fear provision in this case merely encompass situations of implicit threats of force? That would be an implicit threat of force.
I think there still needs to be some standard of reasonableness implied.
Well,
when you have two bags of groceries and you come up there and you ask somebody for money, and basically you have really no means.
Think back to Taylor. Suppose the burglar is actually a 4, make it 3'10". He's a midget. The householder is Yao Ming. Householder could step on him and eliminate him. It wouldn't mean it was less a crime of violence. Right? There's no rule that if a 3-footer invades the household of an 8-footer, it can't be a crime of violence.
I guess we relied on Cole, and the opposition, the possibility of having this reviewed is the basis of Mr. Townsend's appeal. I did reserve time for rebuttal.
All right.
I hope the court
just
it.
Let me make sure we've covered the Booker issue. You're not arguing that there was any Sixth Amendment violation, right?
No, Your Honor.
It sounds like you were desperately trying to waive any Sixth Amendment right you may have had, and the district judge was resisting.
I'm not raising Sixth Amendment.
So why would there be any remedy under Booker if there's not only no Sixth Amendment violation, there's not, on your view of things, the district judge should have considered more facts than he did?
Because I think that, there still relies, and though I've been beaten down here about whether this was a crime of violence or not, I feel that one
But that's not a Booker issue. Right? Booker doesn't change the standards for crime of violence. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Kapp.
Please the court, David Kapp for the United States. This case, Your Honors, does not present a Sixth Amendment claim. The district court below did not rely on any facts beyond the Indiana robbery statute and the charging document lodged by the state of Indiana against Mr. Townsend.
You know, in your brief, what you stated that the facts that were set forth in the supplemental affidavit to support probable cause could be considered part of the charging document. And what I've been wondering ever since I read your brief was how that can be reconciled with Shepard, because wasn't the supplemental affidavit in this case merely a restatement of the police reports, which were not to consider under Shepard or Taylor? Another, was the jury ever required to find the facts in that affidavit in order to convict?
Mr. Townsend pled the jury did not have to require that, correct? But I don't believe.
What I'm saying is we don't look at police reports and other extraneous materials. We look at the charging document. And
I agree, Your Honor. And
was the supplemental affidavit part of the charging document itself?
The way Indiana does it, it's filed together. But
that's exactly right. After Shepard doesn't make the police report salient.
And I'm not suggesting it does, nor did Judge Miller look at any of the details in that affidavit. The district court looked at the state law. And
his view, as I understand it, was that robbery is, as a universal matter, a crime of violence.
Robbery under Indiana law is a crime of violence, period, case closed. Yes, sir. There's absolutely no ambiguity there, and the district court made very precise findings to that effect. That finding, coupled with Mr. Townsend's prior robbery, obviously had an enormous consequence for Mr. Townsend. But the district court did precisely what Shepard now tells us the district court should have done.
Should not have done.
No. The district court here, Your Honor, looked just at the Indiana statute and the face of the charging document, and didn't even really address that much. Primarily looked at the Indiana statute and said Indiana robbery is robbery, period. There is no conceivable way you can be convicted under the Indiana robbery statute and not either use force or put someone in fear. There's no conceivable way. You don't have to look at the supporting affidavit. You don't have to look at any police reports. You don't have to look at anything except the Indiana statute and the fact that Mr. Townsend was convicted.
So in other words, what you're saying is that any facts that were contained in that affidavit, which were essentially a restatement of the police report, is irrelevant.
I think post-Shepard that's irrelevant. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Berger?
Very briefly, Your Honor. I guess I must go back and indicate that there needs to be a reasonable standard. I mean, yes, robbery throughout the statutorily is and by case law held as a crime of violence, but there has to be a reasonable standard. And if this court is going to use crime of violence as an underlying enhancement of a sentence, then they must still, I feel, use a reasonable standard that if someone is going to give money upon the mere asking for it, that doesn't necessarily meet the standard of a crime
like
of violence.
It sounds like, on your view, bank robbery would not be a crime of violence, because an awful lot of them are committed by the robber coming up to the teller, passing a note saying, put the money in the bag now, right? And there's no, and if you don't, I'll shoot you. You think bank robbery is a crime of violence?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. But
then why is other robbery, grocery store robbery, not a crime of violence?
How do we know that that person did not want to or voluntarily would have given the money to that person anyway? I mean, I think the reasonableness there probably works the other way.
Most grocery stores do not view themselves as charities.
Agreed.
Nor do most banks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until next week.